Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,600 podcast episodes, visit our website at biteradio.me. Today, my special guest is Kathy Reichs, author of Evil Bones, a Temperance Brennan novel. When an elderly woman crashes her car during a storm and swears she's seen a sign from Satan, Brennan is called to the scene and discovers a grotesque display, a painted human-like head nailed to a tree. Soon, she unearths a string of similarly staged killings involving mutilated animal skulls, ritual markings, and a trail suggesting something far darker than local superstition. Kathy Reichs' first novel, Deja Dead, published in 1997, won an Ellis Award for Best First Novel and was an international bestseller. Evil Bones is Kathy's 24th novel featuring forensic anthropologist Temperance Brennan. Kathy was also a producer of Fox Television's longest-running scripted drama, Bones, which was based on her work and her novels. Kathy is one of very few forensic anthropologists certified by the American Board of Forensic Anthropology. For more information, you can visit her website, which is kathyreichs.com, and that's Kathy with a K, R-E-I-C-H-S.com. And you can also follow her on X and Instagram with the handle Kathy Reichs, or on Facebook at Kathy Reichs Books. And with that, I'd like to welcome Kathy to the show. Good day, Kathy.
Good day. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome, and I've been a Bones fan for years, so I've been looking forward to this for a while. So let's start with your first book, Deja Death, published in 1997, which is quite a while back, but take us back to that time and tell us what were the circumstances that led you to that first publication.
Oh my goodness. Let's see. You want to know the real story?
Sure. Why not?
Okay. Well, I was teaching full-time University of North Carolina at Charlotte, and I was commuting between Charlotte, North Carolina, and Montreal, which is in Quebec, to do forensic casework. And it was a long commute. I had the motherload of air miles, but during the course, and I had a colleague at that time who published a book on the side. She did a fiction work, and she made a tidy little sum of money selling it. And I had three kids, and all three kids were, I still have them actually, were going to private universities. And private universities are very expensive in the United States. So I thought, well, okay, maybe I could make a little extra money writing a novel like my colleague had done. I had just worked on a serial murder case, which had some very interesting elements involving dismemberment and various, you know, analysis of cut marks and saw marks. So I thought, okay, I'll do it. I'll give it a try. I didn't tell anyone I was writing it, because if you write a novel in the English department, you're a hero. If you write a novel in the science department, you're a little bit suspect. Anyway, I wrote it in secret before going onto campus. I'd get up at 6 in the morning and write for a couple of hours, and I'd write during the summer, and I'd write on weekends and vacations. So it took 2 years, and I submitted that in 1996, and yeah, the first house to which I submitted it bought the manuscript, and the book came out in 1997.
Wow. It's great to have your book accepted and published on the first go-around. That's quite a statement, yeah.
Well, I was about commercial publishing, so I just sent it in thinking, oh, yeah, they'll publish it, as, you know, like they did my scientific books. But, yeah, it worked out, but that's not the way to go about it.
Yeah, I understand. So what inspired you to write this latest novel, Evil Bones?
Part of it, I was under contract.
Okay.
I owe the book to my publisher. Yeah, I'm always on the lookout for ideas. you know, what, and in each of the books I do a different, you know, there's a main theme. There's Temperance Brennan. She's a forensic anthropologist. Human remains are discovered in some compromised, they're burned or they're mutilated or dismembered or, you know, just bones, perhaps. And she has to figure out a couple things. And this is, I'm describing my own casework over the years. Who is this individual and what happened to them? What was the cause of death? So, yeah, back at that time, I was thinking, well, maybe what I do is of interest. I could sense that forensic science was in the air. It was just beginning. CSI was just beginning and Bones was about. Anyway, so I thought I'll give it a try. I'll write a book and I'll do it in secret. I'll spend 2 years doing it. I'll submit it. I think I said to myself 50 times, if I get 50 reject notes in letters, I'll take that as a commentary on my writing skills and go back to my day job. And that's how I went about it.
I bet you didn't expect it to be as long going or ongoing an interest in that particular, in your writing.
I just hoped that some publisher would want to publish it and then that readers would like it, that someone would buy it and actually read the book and like the book. That was my main goal, the very humble goals back then.
Oh, absolutely. So now I've heard you refer to TV Tempe and book Tempe. So can you explain to the listeners what's the difference between the two?
Yeah, somewhere along the way, what was it, around 19? I don't remember dates, but anyway, we were on air for 12 seasons, and I knew when I optioned the character, I knew that they would change the character a bit. I'd had a number of offers, none of which I really felt comfortable with, but when I met with Hart Hansen, who became our showrunner, and Barry Josephson, we were on the same page about what the show would be, that the character, I knew she'd be a little bit younger than I am. Turned out she's a bit taller than I am, too. Emily Deschanel was wonderful in the part. Mm-hmm. We both wanted to have humor. I have humor in my books, which is hard because, you know, the subject is violent. Right. Every book, there's violent death, same thing in the show. But to balance that was a sense of humor. We both thought that that was important. They were willing to respect, you know, you have to make some allowances for the magic of television, but they were going to respect the boundaries of the science as much as possible. So we were just all on the same page. So I agreed to option the character to them, and we went on air and went 2005, and we were on until 2017 or something like that.
I've watched, like I said, all of them. So now, when it comes to the TV presentation, how does that differ from real life cases, other than, you know, finding the answers in an hour?
Well, that's it. That's the main thing, is every single case gets solved. There may have been a couple that hung over from one episode or one season to the next. We had some arcing stories, but basically everything got solved, as you say, within 48 minutes or 52 minutes or whatever it is on commercial TV. But we tried to keep everything reasonably accurate. All of the paraphernalia that you would see in the forensic platform, on the forensic platform in the lab at the autopsy room, you know, all that was real stuff. And the terminology that we used, that the characters used, was real. We obviously couldn't make things as graphic as might be the real situation in an actual autopsy, but we did some pretty graphic stuff, I will say.
Yeah. I had to turn my head a couple times during some of them. I'm not one for medical kinds of displays on TV. Now, when it comes time to writing the book, how do you balance the, for lack of a better word, the entertainment part against the real forensic aspect?
Well, the entertainment part to me is the most important aspect, because I'm writing novels, I'm writing fiction, and my readers they want to be entertained. They want to have a good story. They want to be challenged, I think. When you're reading that kind of forensic thriller, you try to figure it out before the author gives you the answer. That's part of the game. So I think they enjoy that. I like to keep them as realistic as possible, but without, you know, crossing a line where it just becomes too graphic or too detailed.
Yeah. Now, do you use actual, I guess, pieces from your real life forensic work as, I guess, inspiration or even as a component of the book?
Yeah, some of the books are very closely based on, I shouldn't say that. Some of the books grew out of actual casework. The first book, Deja Dead, grew out of a serial murder case. I worked in Montreal, a serial murderer who was dismembering victims, and I was brought into the case in order to look at the bones of one of the victims who'd been killed and buried 2 years earlier. I helped with the exhumation, and then look at those cut marks to see what kind of tool. Was it a saw? Was it a knife? Was it an axe? How was that done? So I used that experience directly in changed everything else, all the names and the dates and the places. But I used that tidbit. I take one core central idea from an axe case, and then I ask myself, okay, well, what if this and what if that? What if that? What if, and then just spin it off into fiction.
Yeah. Well, as an actual forensic anthropologist, you obviously will have an endless amount of material coming your way.
Yeah, and I still, while I'm largely retired from practice, I still attend I read the journal, the Journal of Forensic Science, JFS, is our main professional journal. And it has not just anthropology, but it has all of the specialty areas of forensic dentistry, forensic pathology, forensic chemistry, you know, everything that's fire and arson, whatever. So I get ideas from that, certainly. And I also attend the annual meeting of the American Academy of Forensic Sciences. And that's great. I go to all the different sections. We have, 11 sections for the specialty areas, and I attend presentations and talk to colleagues, and that's great for getting ideas for stories that are, you know, situations I wasn't directly involved in, but I have colleagues that were involved in.
Yeah. Now, during those kinds of gatherings, do you have other peers kind of coming to you and wanting to explore the idea of publication, novel?
I have had, say, well, you know, how did you go about this? How did you go about writing the book? And then how did you go about getting the book published?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would think, you know, when they see the success that you've had, it can be enticing for people.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the, as far as the role, the Bones TV, and I noticed that you were also a producer on that. So tell me, you know, what was your experience as a producer? That has to be a very different role.
Yeah, I was mostly a writing producer, I suppose. Just being on set, and I wrote a number of episodes, and I would particularly have to be on set when my episodes were filming, so that if the actors had questions, Emily really, really always wanted to get it right, and she always had lots of questions, I could be available to answer the questions, either of the director or the actors or, you know, whoever needed additional information. Otherwise, I spent some time on set, but most of my time in the writer's room. We did have a writer's room. We had a staff of, I think we had 7 full-time writers, I can't remember, and then by guild law, you had regulations. You had to keep, I think, 3 for, what did they call it? There was a term for it, just part-time people that would write one individual.
Okay. So now, when it comes time to being connected to some of your real-life forensic work, is there any particular case or cases that really impacted you emotionally?
Well, I think the hardest cases were the children. You know, whenever child's remains were found. Yeah, that would, and it was the one time I think also, there's a lot of black humor in the autopsy room. It's a tension reliever with the cops just standing around and, you know, whoever happens to be standing around observing an autopsy. But the one time there was none, there was no humor, it was when it was a child. Yeah, those were the most heartbreaking cases.
Yeah, I can't imagine. So, excuse me, I also noted that you worked on identifying some of the remains from 9/11 Ground Zero. Tell us about that experience. That had to have been, you know, because the nation was focused on it as well.
Yeah, and everybody wanted to do something. Everybody wanted to donate money or blood or shoes or sweatshirts or, you know, whatever it was. So I was fortunate, I suppose, in being able to actually go to partly I was at Ground Zero. Mostly the remains were being taken out to Staten Island to labs that had been set up out there. So mostly I was working out there, and the remains would come to us, and we would first of all determine if it was human or not human, because there were a lot of animal bones being found, because there were restaurants and catering services, that kind of thing, in the Twin Towers. Yeah, and then when everything was between the crushing and the heat and the steam and everything was very, very fragmentary. So we would determine if it was human, then we would assign it a coroner's case number and bag it and send it in to the medical examiner facility in New York.
When I look back at that particular period of time, to me, it just seems almost overwhelming, the tasks that people had to go through in order to help, you know, bring some closure to some family members.
It was massive. And at first we worked 24 hours. There were day shift and night shift. And I think eventually they moved, for the anthropologists at least, they moved away from having a night shift. But yeah, we worked 13-hour shifts, and it was cold and the air was bad, and you had to wear all these, you know, hazmat gear. And yeah, it was not my favorite time.
No, I can imagine. I can imagine. Now, you were talking about having to identify human remains versus animal remains. Now, in the book Evil Bones, it talks about, you know, mutilated animal skulls, ritual markings, and that kind of thing. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the idea of killers ritualizing death, you know, making death be a part of some kind of belief system? Can you talk about, you know, how you can either maybe understand, you know, the killers kind of MO, or maybe even help decode some of their actions?
Yeah, my focus and Tempe's focus is really on physical evidence, hard evidence, something, and that's why I went into anthropology and not psychology. I like something to weigh and measure and photograph, and, you know, it's a physical object. So I try not to get, and I'm not qualified to get into questions of psychology or motivation, but you can't help wondering about it. Why, how could somebody do this? Why would somebody do, you know, torture animals or nail animal carcasses to trees or whatever bizarre ritual behavior it happens to be? So you can't help wondering about that, and Tempe does certainly, and there is a forensic psychologist in the book, a new character that I've introduced that more directly addresses those questions.
Oh, that's a new twist. That's great. So it'll have people wondering in several different ways. So now the book title is Evil Bones, and, you know, the idea of evil can be, people will have a very subjective perception of what evil is. But, you know, when it comes to that idea, how can you, or how can one, both recognize evil and put it aside? I mean, you know, in a sense of, you know, there's symbolism involved in it. To me, it seems that it might actually distort some of the work that's being done, or even the public perception of what the actions were.
Yeah, and that's one of the questions the book addresses but doesn't necessarily answer is what is evil? What is truly evil? And it, how that is defined varies from society to society and from time to time. And also, how does society deal with evil then? If you've defined something as evil, and I think everyone can agree that, you know, evil is involved, you know, the torture or the killing of children, I think that's recognized as evil. And also, any to me, it's any vulnerable person that can't, like animals and children. And that's what the focus of this story is.
Oh, okay. So now, working with remains for as long as you have, what have you learned about just the idea of moral boundaries, you know, truth, memory?
Well, again, I try not to get into the head of the perpetrator. My job is I work with the victims. So I get remains in my lab. My questions might be one of two. One is, who is it? ID, what can I reconstruct from the bones that can help figure out who this person is? And then the second question is, well, what happened to them? Either what brought about death, manner and cause of death, or what happened to them after death, body treatment, what was done with the remains? Those are the main questions I address and answer them through the remains themselves.
So is there another book, under contract or otherwise, in the works?
Actually, this one was the last one for which I'm under contract, so we're talking about it, so we'll see.
Okay, well, that's great. Well, do you have any maybe last words, Cassie, that you'd like to share with listeners about Evil Bones?
Well, I hope they'll find it an engaging story. I think all their favorite characters are there. Tempe, of course, is there. Ryan is there. Tempe's daughter is there. We meet some new characters. Her great niece, Ruthie, I think we met very briefly in a short story that I wrote, and I can't remember which one it was. It was in the Bones collection of, you know, four novellas that were published. I think it was called The Bone Collection. Anyway, so all of those characters are up here in this story, and I think it's one that, that they'll find engaging.
Yeah, I read it, and I find it, I really couldn't put it down. You know, it was one of those that it was, in a way, having the TV, you know, viewership, in a way, kind of added a familiarity, you know, to the book characters, even though they're different, but there is that touch of the familiar with it. So I think that, for me, also made it more engaging. It was less of an effort to be able to identify and relate to the characters.
Yeah, there are differences, certainly. The TV show took place largely in Washington, D.C., the other books take place in the Carolinas and in Montreal. But it's like there's just more of Tempe that we can enjoy, different aspects of Tempe that we can enjoy, both TV Tempe and book Tempe.
Absolutely. Well, Cassie, I really want to thank you for your time today and sharing with us about Evil Bones. I'm sure it will be another huge success like your other books. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Cassie Reichs, author of the newly released last week, Evil Bones, a Temperance Brennan novel. And again, for more information, you can visit her website, which is CassieReichs.com. And again, you can follow her on X and Instagram at the handle Cassie Reichs or on Facebook at the handle Cassie Reichs Books. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.